is Budweiser's weekday sports beat on your home of the Irish. 960 AM and 96.1 FM. WSBT.
Is Martin for three. Got it!
The Clay Colonials win the state championship.
Notre Dame is beating number one BC. Over the board come the Irish.
Cubs win.
Katie Douglas, her shot is up.
No good. And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
Way in over Roger Penske. Win the Daytona 500.
That's Stanley Cox to the Chicago Blackhawks.
The Irish is upset. Florida State. Notre Dame is number one.
We welcome you to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. The news at the top of the hour brought to you by Sport Clips. You watch sports, they cut hair. It's perfect. Sport Clips. It's good to be a guy. It is 7 minutes after 5 o'clock. We are live at Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend. My name is Darren Pritchett. He is Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. And the South Bend Cubs open up a 7-game homestand tonight. Should be a beautiful night for baseball. We have tickets available. If you'd like to come on down to the ballpark, we've got seats for you. We got Belly Buster Monday. We have a South Bend Cubs poster giveaway. All for you tonight at Four Winds Field. We'll also have the game on WSBT Radio, 7:05 first pitch, 6:50 Jordan Automotive Group pregame show. On the program this evening, we're going to talk Notre Dame spring football in the opening segment, including a conversation on what could be a very interesting battle for the number two quarterback position this fall with the Fighting Irish football program. Also, at the bottom of this hour, we'll follow up on some NFL draft conversation because we're less than 2 weeks away from the draft. And I just grabbed a couple of analysts where they have DeShone Kizer going. We'll talk about that. And also, since we've spent so much time on Kizer, maybe we'll sprinkle in a couple other guys that could be drafted in the 2017 NFL draft from the Fighting Irish football program. Our My Five question of the day, back into this hour, Eric will answer this question. What do you believe is on Notre Dame football coaches Brian Kelly's checklist for the final week of spring practice? So we'll get to that coming up in just a little bit. Tom Noy will be the co-host next hour. We're going to mix in some Notre Dame basketball conversation. He has some interesting tidbits to pass along. Also, we have not had a chance to ask Tom on the air about Bonzi Colson returning. And then we'll have a baseball segment leading up to the start of our South Bend Cubs coverage tonight at 6:50 on 96.1 FM WSBT. Did you have a good weekend?
I did. Anytime it's 80 degrees at some point, it's mesmerizing. I appreciate days like that.
Oh, without a doubt. And hopefully we'll have a nice day on Saturday when the spring game will take place, and you can hear that on WSBT Radio Saturday at 12:30. Sean Stiers, yourself, I will be at Notre Dame Stadium calling that game. It's always a thrill every year, and it's going to be a lot of fun to see a lot of newness. Now, there's not going to be a lot of newness probably shown. It's a spring game, and you don't want to give away too much when you have a new offensive, defensive, and special teams coordinator. But at the same time, we'll start to see some of these new pieces that we've talked about actually putting on helmets and pads and playing in a game situation. So I think there is some benefit to this game from a media and fans' perspective.
I think so, too, and it's going to be capped at 25,000 in attendance because of the ongoing campus crossroads project construction. But yeah, I definitely think there's stuff to look for. Again, it's kind of a distortion fest because of the vanilla schemes and so forth, but I still think there's plenty to watch. And one of the things, you know, I really want to see is Ian Book in a game situation. You know, we've seen a little bit of him in the live practices. He hasn't jumped out at me, and I think in a game situation I'll have a better feel for his progress as a number two quarterback, because it's very important that he's ready to play in September as Brandon Wimbush being the number one. But having a strong number two, and Avery Davis is going to come in June and challenge him.
That's going to be our first conversation. You recently wrote about the battle for the number two position. Obviously, it's very, very important. You never know when an injury to the starting quarterback could take place. A guy like Brandon Wimbush, who knows how much he's truly going to run in this offense, but there are going to be opportunities for him to show his really, really good speed and acceleration. So you always want to have that number two ready to go. You don't have a guy with any experience on the football field in a game situation in college right now behind Brandon Wimbush. You just mentioned the spring game will offer you an opportunity to learn a little bit more about Ian Book. With that being said, from what you've heard from the coaches and from what you have viewed as a media member throughout spring practice, has Ian Book left the door open for Avery Davis to come in and make some noise this fall?
Well, I think Avery Davis has knocked on the door more than Ian Book has left it open for him. You know, he's kind of what he was advertised to be coming out of Oak Ridge High School in it's in Northern California near Sacramento, El Dorado Hills. He played in a very good league. Sierra Foothill League is one of the best leagues in California. And Jake Browning came out of his rival high school, Folsom, and is starring at Washington as a quarterback. You know, he was known for being a very accurate passer, completed 71% of his passes his senior year, averaged about 6 yards rushing the ball. Spread was new to him his senior year. They were pro style his sophomore and junior years, and he adapted very well to the spread, and we've kind of seen that. Now, you don't see the spectacular plays that you see from Brandon Wimbush. You don't see the same arm strength, but he looks like a solid, you know, number two guy that still has some learning to do. And you'll contrast that with Avery Davis's skill set. It's funny because people think of Avery Davis as, is he tall enough to play in this offense at 5'11"? Well, the funny thing about it is Ian Book is 6 foot. And I talked to Avery Davis's quarterback's coach over the weekend, and Avery Davis has grown an inch and a half, so he's over 6 foot. So he may not be the shortest quarterback on the roster when he gets here. He's also running track, which he has his whole high school career. He's a sprinter. He has done long jump and triple jump before. The events that I've seen him in, entered in this year, have been mostly the short relays, the 4x100, the 4x200. Pretty fast kid. And he also played incredible competition. In fact, probably better competition than Ian Book. So they both have been tested at least at that level. Cedar Hill, which is in Texas near kind of in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, they lost 3 games this year. One of them was to the number one team in the nation, which was Bishop Gorman from Las Vegas. They lost to them in Las Vegas, and then they lost to their rival, DeSoto, who was the number three team in the nation. So everybody else, they scored a million points, it seemed like, against. He missed a couple games with an ankle injury, but in his last game against DeSoto, they lost in the playoffs to them 55-41.
Wow.
They had 574 yards in total offense, and he had 572 of them and 6 touchdowns. So he's a guy that it is going to be pretty interesting when he gets here. You know, in just talking with people that have seen him play, very quick release, is a guy that probably will have more learning to do in terms of reading coverages, because Ian Book had all last year to kind of learn that a little bit, and he's had this spring.
And what really puts Avery at a disadvantage, he was not here for spring practice. Not everybody, it works out to do that.
Right.
So if Avery Davis is here in the spring, then I think there's a realistic opportunity for him to overtake Book in the fall. I mean, it's still possible. Don't get me wrong, but the odds are really against you, because you are going through so many learning curves when you first get with the football team that I think for a young freshman quarterback that was not here for the spring, it's all about just sort of staying out of the way, trying to learn things, learn how to practice. I mean, there's a lot of things going on besides trying to execute plays.
His quarterback's coach mentioned that, and his head coach is actually on the Baylor staff now. He took a job there, but the quarterback's coach mentioned, you know, he came off the bench in their state championship game as a sophomore, had a big run that set up a game-winning field goal, threw some passes in that game. So he's kind of a gamer, but he said the same thing. In the three games he lost, he faced Division I quarterbacks who were early enrollees. Tate Martell from Bishop Gorman is already at Ohio State, and Sean Robinson at DeSoto is already at TCU. And he said that if Avery had gotten in, that really would have helped him out a lot. He says once he gets the system down, he's going to be really difficult to hold down. But again, how many reps is he going to get if he's the number three guy? So he's really going to have to do a lot of learning in June when he gets here.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett, live at Four Winds Field. Right now, focusing on Notre Dame football spring practice. Our emphasis right now, the battle for the number two quarterback position on Brian Kelly's depth chart. If Ian Book were to get into a game, let's say first game of the year, he's got to go in and play for a couple of series. Can you paint a picture of what fans might expect from Ian Book? I would have to assume that the playbook would go a little different direction with Brandon Wimbush out of the ballgame.
I think it will, too, but I don't think either one of them are the zone read guys, you know, zone read, living on zone read like you would have seen with Malik Zaire had he still been around, or at times with Deshaun Kizer. I think you'll see a lot of the same things that they do with Brandon Wimbush, kind of rolling him out of the pocket and giving him run pass options. He's probably a better runner than people would expect from him, but he's not going to be able to do what Brandon Wimbush does, which is run away from defensive backs. But, you know, again, his specialty is accuracy. He puts the ball in a position where not only can the receiver catch it, but his position to tack on yardage after the catch. So that's what we've seen from him. What Tom Reese mentioned,
either
his,
way,
his quarterback coach would
he'll answer to both.
Coach Reese mentioned was just seeing consistency. You would see one day where you see a lot of growth from Ian, the next day kind of flat, and that's pretty typical of a redshirt freshman. And he thinks the real growth will come this summer. But consistency in performance is really what they need to see from Ian.
Maybe I'm overly optimistic. Now, I was the guy after the Fiesta Bowl 2 years ago. I said, I'm not going to jump to any conclusions about the defense. They're going to have to show me, and then I'll buy in. I wasn't going to buy into all the stuff, and I'm kind of glad I didn't buy in last year because with Brian Van Gorder, it didn't work out very well.
Right.
Now, I'll go on the other side, I guess, of the spectrum and say, I sit here today fully believing that Brandon Wimbush will be a very good starting quarterback right out of the gates. I feel like he has been around the college game and this program for a couple of years. Now, I know the offense has some tweaks, but, I mean, the foundation is still Brian Kelly's offense, and then Chip Long's moving some stuff around. He's tweaking. He's changing some things. Obviously, he's bringing in tempo. But if the foundation of the offense, the way I understand it, is there, Wimbush is deep into that playbook. So it just comes down to executing what he needs to do in a game situation. And I just feel very comfortable that he has enough different things in his game, in his arsenal, that can make him very dangerous. Just watching him throw the football in practice, it's a laser. It's a catchable football. There's not a lot of wobble in those passes. So I feel like it's going to be a very catchable football for all the pass catchers. And again, when the play breaks down, I think this guy has the chance to be one of the better quarterbacks in some time at Notre Dame that has the ability to make something out of nothing. Now, Kizer could do that, but he couldn't make that explosive drop-your-mouth type play like I think Wimbush can. Zaire, I just never was convinced he was going to be a good enough passer to bail out of a bad play. I know he can run with the football. To me, Wimbush offers the best of both worlds. So do you feel like taking him out of the mothballs and throwing him in the starting lineup, that we will see a guy that will be able to effectively lead the team to victory. And not just be, you know, most people hate this, but a game manager, which I don't think he's going to be by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I think he can be pretty dynamic. I think the one thing that's difficult for me to predict is as we get into the season, we're going to get all the Brian Kelly hot seat talk again. It's just going to come up. Now,
Even before they lose a game?
You
think so?
Yeah, I saw an article today from somebody on our beat that kind of didn't talk about the hot seat, but was pretty critical of Brian Kelly. And I think that it'll come up again, not so much from our beat, but from national media. It'll be kind of the Brian Kelly watch. And how much Brandon Wimbush can insulate himself. Remember last year when Notre Dame was kind of shaky out of the gate, I thought DeShone Kizer put too much on his shoulders, and I think the coaches would tell you the same thing. That, and so can Brandon kind of stay out of that trap and play the way that he's playing now? Because right now, there's not that stuff. I think Brandon Wimbush will handle pressure well.
I do too.
His own pressure. It's somebody else's. Is he playing for his coach? You know, that's where it gets kind of sticky. And then,
or is somebody going to call him a diva?
Yeah, exactly. Somebody call him a diva. But also, what if the defense struggles out of the gate? You know, will he feel?
Now that's a different story.
Now, will he feel pressure to, you know, maybe throw into tighter windows to outscore the other team? So those are the kind of things where it's difficult in the spring to see how he's going to react to. But I think, you know, I think Brandon is very mature. I think he's very cerebral. I think he's very athletic. He's all the things that you want in a quarterback. And I expect him to play very well.
Well, you've got a guy in Josh Adams that can take a lot of pressure off whoever the quarterback is, particularly Brandon Wimbush. If his body is healthy going into this season, I think sky's the limit. You saw month of November last year, I think he was truly healthy for the first time, and you started to see that acceleration and explosion and difference-making ability that we saw during his freshman campaign. And if the emphasis is truly there to run the football this season, then the opportunities for Josh Adams are going to be remarkable this season. And I guess if you run the ball well enough with Josh Adams, that takes a little pressure off having to run your quarterback all the time.
It does, but
it's still going to be part of the offense, don't get me
right,
wrong.
Right, it is. I mean, and what their offense, from my understanding, how it works is they want to have an answer to everything you do. So if you want to put eight in a box, they have an answer for it on offense. It may not be a running play, but they'll have an answer for it. If you want to drop eight into coverage, they'll have an answer for it. They want to have a counterattack to everything you do, and they seem to think they have the personnel this year to do that. Now, I want to see that because doing it against ND's defense in the spring game isn't going to convince me that they can do it against Georgia, for example. So I'm going to have to see it. But when you think about the pieces that they're assembling on offense, an improved offensive line, all those tight ends, you got Equanimeous St. Brown and Chase Claypool and a bunch of good receivers. You know, where are you worried about on this offense? Where's the worry point? It should be an offense, other than an injury, it should be an offense that is pretty dynamic. And here's the roll of the dice, though, is Chip Long and Tom Reese every bit as good as advertised? You know, are they ahead of the curve in terms of their experience? Varell did a really nice story on Tom Reese and why Pat Fitzgerald and the San Diego Chargers felt like he was, you know, miles ahead of where a 24-year-old should be in terms of his coaching. And I'm sure that we can hear the same thing about Chip Long, but I want to see it.
1 year of play calling.
1 year of play calling. And so that's the scary part. And then again, you know, remember when you would go in your driver's ed car and the teacher had the brake, had that extra brake in there? You know, Brian Kelly is the guy with the extra brake. Is he going to keep his foot off that second brake?
Brian Kelly, driving instructor.
Yes.
I can see it now. Clipboard in hand. Very good. Well, the one thing about the running game, what I was trying to get to is you can take pressure off not using your quarterback so much. For example, you're up 17, 20 points late in the third quarter. You don't have to expose maybe the quarterback if you can run the ball successfully
right.
with Josh Adams. Or, more than anything else, the ability on third down and one to just punch somebody in the mouth and get the first down. Boy, how difficult was it on third and one for this football team last year to pick up first downs? There was a home game. They had to throw a little bubble screen trying to pick up the first down, and the wide receiver didn't block, and the other wide receiver got hit, and they still didn't pick up the first down. So that's the type of thing I'm talking about. Keeping the hands out of Wimbush every once in a while in situations where you don't have to risk your quarterback because of, more than anything else, you just don't have a lot of experience, if any, right now at the number two spot. Just when you know that the offense is going to run the football and the offense can still get that first down, that's when you're in business, and that's what Fighting Irish football needs to get back to.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Darren, when you think about the struggles on third down. Somebody asked me about it in chat, and now that I've thought about it a little bit more, you know who's one of the best teams in the country on third and one and fourth and one? It's Navy.
I was hoping you were going to say Memphis.
it's Navy. And they have a smaller offensive line and so forth, but they execute so well on third down. Plus, you really don't know where the ball's going, and
there's
good read. Well, couldn't you replicate that maybe to a certain sense with a conventional team without running triple option? Couldn't you put two backs in the backfield and have third down plays that replicate what Navy does? Because they're uncanny in their ability to be able to convert those third and short and fourth and short. They did it all day against Notre Dame's defense, and they did it against a lot of other folks too. But I think some of it's play call. I think some of it's been, you know, third down backs. For whatever reason, Josh Adams hasn't been automatic as a third down back. You wonder if Tony Jones Jr. is the guy that's going to be.
How much is that, though, the guys in front of him?
I think at times it has been. But even, you know, on the Ronnie Stanley line in 2015 with C.J. Procise, they weren't that good of a short yardage team that year. You know, they struggled a little bit on third down until they started getting Kaiser involved in it. Kaiser became their short yardage back about halfway through the year. But they should be better at that. I think that's what fans kind of scratch their head about is why not. But I do think this offensive line is going to be better. I had a chance to do a story with Aaron Taylor late last week, All-America guard and tackle at Notre Dame, and went on to be a pretty good professional football player before his body betrayed him, but he's a heck of an analyst, and he kind of took me through the evolution of an offensive line, and I am, after talking to him, I am convinced that they're going to be markedly better this year.
I could be one of your chat guys and bring up the fact that Lou Holtz used a fullback back in the day on Thursday.
That's true, and football's a way different game, though, now.
What? You're kidding.
I know. Everybody wants to go back to that, but there is something to what they want to see in terms of a running game. I don't necessarily think Notre Dame is de-emphasizing the run, or they're not doing it enough. They weren't good enough at it. They couldn't run when they had to last year, and they need to be able to do more of that. And again, some of that had to do with Josh Adams, but you need other folks that are going to be able to step up, and I think they've got a pretty good stable of running backs this year.
You know how I feel. If it takes someone in front of the running back to get more first downs, I'm all in favor of it.
Well, they use the tight end in motion. They use the tight end kind of like the fullback. So
I'm open for anything. I'm open for business.
Okay.
It is now 5:30 on WSBT Radio. Sports Beat presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buns. Buy Sport Clips. You watch sports. They cut hair. It's perfect. Sport Clips, it's good to be a guy. Legacy Heating and Air and Harold Ziegler Ford Lincoln and Elkhart, 2525 Bypass Rotor at z4.com. A week from Thursday, the NFL draft gets underway. Deshaun Kizer, other Irish, what should we expect? That's our next conversation as SportsBeat continues on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Great day to play some golf out at Blackthorn. You can catch the golf show every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on WSBT Radio. This Saturday, I'll be joined by John Foster from Notre Dame's Warren and Tim Firestone from Blackthorn. Plenty of golf conversation coming up Saturday morning at 8. Then we have the Blue Gold scrimmage live at 12:30 on WSBT Radio. And then we have a little baseball at 7:05 Saturday night. So please no rain on Saturday. It would make my day just a whole lot easier if we can just go through that just smooth as silk.
I would vote for no rain on Saturday.
You can rain the next three Saturdays. I don't care. Just leave us alone this Saturday. But field turf at Notre Dame Stadium, so that makes things a whole lot better, right?
It does. It does.
Is the video board up, by the way?
I don't think it's finished. I don't think they're going to use it.
I'm not expecting to use it. I just wonder if it was up yet, that we would see how big it is.
I think you will see the at least outside structure, and you'll get an idea of how big it is.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Can't wait. Going to be very, very interesting. At night, that's going to be fantastic. Well, NFL draft coming up a week from Thursday. Boy, the circus that is Deshaun Kizer. I mean, every day just feels like his status, where he may go, changes with the wind. There's actually some people that do this for a living, that analyze drafts. I'm assuming that they talk to NFL personnel, so I'm assuming they have a good feel for what's going on. Deshaun Kizer's gone from a guy that many believe would be the first quarterback taken. Some people thought that early on.
Right.
Now there are people saying he could be the fifth quarterback taken. Now let me give you an example. NFL Network has a draft analyst named Chad Reuter. I'm not familiar with him.
Okay.
I don't think you've heard of him either. I think he's a new guy.
I've seen his stuff on Twitter.
I think he's new this year to the NFL Network. If he's not, I've not noticed him.
Okay.
He has in his latest mock draft, and I'm just not buying this, the Browns going number one and taking Mitch Trubisky, the quarterback from Carolina. I just can't believe you take a quarterback with less than 15 starts in his collegiate career, number one overall. I know quarterbacks are in demand. I get it, but I just don't see Trubisky being that wow guy. But it's the Cleveland Browns. Anything's possible. They have a lot of picks the next couple of years. Hopefully it works out for them. Chad has Deshaun Watson going sixth to the Jets, 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 Jets. Then it gets really strange. I'm not buying this one either. At 13, the Cardinals taking Pat Mahomes from Texas Tech. I mean, I've not seen him in the first round throughout this entire process. Have you?
Right. No.
So I'm not.
But he's the hot name right now. This is kind of how it works. So
his dad was a Major League Baseball player.
Right.
Then he's got Davis Webb of California going 38th to the Los Angeles Chargers. And then Deshaun Kizer going number 42 to the New Orleans Saints. I'll say this. I would not be shocked if Deshaun Kizer goes 42nd. I would be shocked if he's the fifth quarterback off the board.
I would be too. I just think there's too much potential there. I think the difference in going early in the first round, going late in the first or early second, is his ability to be ready to start next year. And if he's not going to start next year, it makes sense for him to fall a little bit. But again, I just hearing for too many people, I'm going to do a conference call with John Gruden on Wednesday after we get done with practice. And I saw some snippets from the quarterback, what do they call it, quarterback camp with John Gruden and Deshaun Kizer. And he is in love with Deshaun Kizer. I mean, he thinks he's tremendous. And he showed a pass from the Temple game where Deshaun was able to get it to Will Fuller. And it wasn't a deep pass. It was in the red zone late in the game when they were trailing. Against cover two, he said, you should not have been able to complete that pass. And he just lasered it in there. And I just think there's too much goodness in Deshaun Kizer, for him to be the fifth quarterback. I can see people saying the other quarterbacks are more NFL ready, although I'm not sure that I'm buying it with Mahomes, and I'm definitely not buying it with Webb. So we'll see how it goes. But I think, again, for Deshaun, it's more important to go to a good fit than it is to go high in the draft, to go in the first half of the first round.
Now, Scott Wright, whom we've used for years in the program, Eric, you've used him in the South Bend Tribune as a reference from DraftCountdown.com. I think his selections are more realistic than the ones I just read to you. Scott has at number 12 the Cleveland Browns taking Mitch Trubisky. Now, that makes sense.
Right.
Rather than number one, to get him at number 12.
Right, because you want Myles Garrett with that first pick, the defensive end from Texas A&M, and you're still going to be able to get a pretty good quarterback at number 12.
Yeah, I'm doubting someone's going to just zoom up the charts into the top 10 to get Trubisky. That's just my feel. Could be wrong. But Trubisky, 12 to the Browns. Then Clemson's Deshaun Watson goes 27 to Kansas City. There you go. I think that makes a lot of sense. Alex Smith, to me, is not a quarterback that's going to take you to the next level. Great defense, running game. They got a lot of interesting parts on offense for Andy Reid to work with. Maybe you bring in Deshaun Watson as that future quarterback. I think that pick makes a whole lot of sense. And then Wright has Deshaun Kizer third off the board, going 34-2. And again, this makes a lot of sense. If you're at Pro Day at Notre Dame when they had three or four guys watching Kizer, the San Francisco 49ers. I think that's the team, and that's the spot. If I had to take a guess on what's going to happen, I would not be shocked. Kizer to the 49ers, early second round. I'll lock in my answer.
And isn't Matt LaFleur the new offensive coordinator with the San Francisco
49ers? You know what? I think you're right.
Yeah, so there's a connection there from their time together at
good point.
Notre Dame, because he was a quarterback's coach 1 year.
That makes a lot of sense. It really, really does. And they have no quarterbacks on the roster right now, so if he wants the opportunity to start right away, there would be that opportunity. Now, whether that's the best for him or not, I think that's a different conversation. I think he's a guy that needs to be groomed into the system. Now, trust me, I appreciate how he went from off the radar at Notre Dame to taking over in that Virginia game, playing well, hey, partially winning the game. He's a big reason why they won. And then in the coming weeks, just continue to get better and better. And like, wow, where did this guy come from? So he's proven he can go from off the radar to the starting lineup and succeed. But now we're talking about something a whole different in the National Football League.
Right, but his history is kind of where he's been more of what can he turn into. When he was coming out of high school, Toledo Central Catholic, remember Brian Kelly talking about that they were a little bit divided on him. They really wanted to get Kyle Allen. Kyle Allen had picked Texas A&M, so then they kind of moved on to their next target, and Deshaun was in that conversation, and there were some people that felt like his delivery was just a little bit too elongated. He didn't have, you know, Everett Golson-type stats or even Malik Zaire-type stats. You know, he was decent. He won a lot of games, but he was a three-sport athlete. And so they thought, well, you know, could he develop into a top echelon college quarterback? And lo and behold, he really did. And in a very short period of time, when you think about 2015 spring practice, how awful he looked and how few opportunities he got, to being a guy that was starting and winning big games for Notre Dame. So I think there are going to be people that are divided on him again in terms of what he can turn into, because he doesn't have maybe the glowing numbers that Deshaun Watson has, but I would take him in a heartbeat. The more that I think about it, the more, if I were a general manager, I'd say he's going to be really, really good someday. I really think he will be.
But I'm still not taking him in the first round. I'm going early second round. The accuracy is the only thing holding me back.
I would take him toward the end of the first round.
Okay. So you're going to spend a little more signing bonus on a quarterback than I will. That's okay.
Yep.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you, talking about DeShone Kizer, the upcoming NFL draft. Now, I heard this morning. I was flipping around the channels doing some work.
Yeah.
And the NFL Network, who now actually has a really good morning show for the first time in many years, they put together a really good group, and they were having a conversation about the Buffalo Bills, who they should take with their pick in the top 10. And one person was the GM, one was the coach, one was something else. So they offered different perspectives, and it was a fun conversation. Well, the GM had the ultimate say, and he ticked off the coach because he wants to take DeShone Watson because he feels like he can be a difference maker in the NFL. And one of the arguments that was made, now this is just part of the argument, not the full argument, but part of the argument was this guy went up against Nick Saban, back-to-back title games. Watson played a great game 2 years ago in the title game, came up short, but he played really, really good against the outstanding Alabama defense. So then Saban had tape on him, and he didn't necessarily have a year to prepare for the second meeting. Don't get me wrong, but he knew what to expect going into that second meeting, and Watson played great again and beat Alabama with a last-second touchdown pass. And part of the argument was the closest thing, not the same, but the closest thing to the NFL is trying to score points against the Alabama defense, and Nick Saban is the guy that puts that defense together, even though he's the head coach. And look what Watson did. So why wouldn't you take a chance on a guy that was able to do so many good things about the best college football has to offer?
You know, I think those are really good points. That when DeShone was a junior, or I'm sorry, I guess he would have been a sophomore that year, I voted for him in my top three for the Heisman. I might have had him second. I thought he was tremendous. But last year, he played big in big games, but he also flattened out in some of the smaller games where they almost lost. NC State, he didn't play well. He had some interceptions in some other games that I believe the Pitt game, which they lost. And so if you're going to play big in the big games, you got to play big in the small games, too. The interceptions bothered me. The other thing is,
that's the one thing, yes.
Does his game translate as well to the pro game as DeShone Kizer's skill set does? You know, I think DeShone Watson, and it's funny because the DeShones are pretty good friends, I think Watson's a much better runner than Kizer. But I don't think that translates as well to the NFL. I think Watson is more NFL-ready by a little bit. But, again, in the long run, I think DeShone Kizer has the skill set that you want in the NFL, and that's why I would pick him over Watson. And it's not because he plays for Notre Dame and I covered him, although I'm more familiar. I mean, I thought when Watson was a sophomore, he was hands down the best quarterback in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think. But again, you got to. How does it translate? And his legs do a lot of things for him. You wonder, you know. And with the Heisman Trophy winner from Auburn, Cam Newton, his game did translate well. But Cam Newton was number one, I think, in the country in passing efficiency his last year at Auburn as well. So it wasn't just his great running ability. He was a pretty accomplished passer at Auburn.
The thing is about those college quarterbacks that do a lot of running in the spread, they're getting banged up in the NFL. Cam got knocked around really, really hard this year. And, of course, there's the big argument. Since he is so big, are defenders taking unnecessary hits to him? Are the NFL officials not protecting him? Whether that's accurate or not, he really, really took a beating the last couple of years. Now, got to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. It didn't work out. But last year was not a great year for Cam and the Carolina Panthers. All I care that happens in the NFL draft is one thing. DeShone Watson has to play for the New York Jets. You know why?
Why?
Because when you think about New York City and barbershops and coming to America, Mr. DeShone Watson, everybody. Not Randy Watson, DeShone Watson. Then you can see that scene all the time. That'd be a great bit, right?
That would be awesome.
Mr. Randy Watson. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. NFL Network's Mike Mayock, who is their Mel Kiper, so to speak, draft analyst, recently dropped Kizer from number 1 to number 4 in his quarterback draft rankings. Mayock had this to say, quote, "The reality for me is I haven't changed my opinion on any of these kids, but I've been around the NFL people for the last 6 weeks, and from my perspective, Kaiser still has the biggest ceiling of any quarterback in this draft. He's the prototypical NFL franchise quarterback, but he's not ready to play. I think he's a year or two away from stepping
under the bus
on an NFL field." End quote. What?
Under the bus.
Oh, under the bus. Now, Mayock talked about Mahomes, who you mentioned is kind of the hot guy right now. Quote, "Now, Mahomes is as exciting as all get out. And there's a lot of momentum in the NFL for Patrick Mahomes. He is a pure gunslinger. He wants to hit a home run every snap of the game. And I really have two or three questions on him. Number one, can he settle for a single instead of a home run? Number two, can he win in the pocket on a consistent basis? And number three, can he work on his fundamentals, techniques, and decision-making? And if he can't, I'm telling you guys, he's the most exciting quarterback in this year's draft." Now, what he pointed out are really, really important things in the National Football League. You better be able to play in the pocket. He's not going to last long if he can't stay in the pocket, or if he's going to roll out and you can't make a play. But also, part of being in the NFL is learning to take your medicine, and you can't just go for it at all times, because those defensive backs, those safeties, they are going to shock you how quickly they get to the football compared to the college game. And let me say one more thing. These wide open offenses in the college game, how many times do those guys go to the NFL and have success?
Well, again, is he a system quarterback where his numbers are inflated?
See, there you go.
The other thing is, he plays in the Big 12. He hasn't even seen elite defensive backs.
Great point.
And so, but he may turn out to be a great quarterback, but I would not take him ahead of Deshaun Kaiser. I wouldn't take him ahead of Deshaun Watson, either Deshaun.
Do you have to be concerned about the system he is coming from the way everybody had to be concerned about David Klingler and Andre Ware coming out of Houston? To me, yes, you have to worry about that.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it can't produce an elite pro guy, but you do have to say, okay, is he a product of this system? Are his numbers inflated? And playing in the Big 12, are his numbers inflated? I still think he's a good quarterback, but I don't think he's better than the Deshauns or Trubisky.
It's just hard to evaluate a quarterback playing in the Big 12. I mean, defense just is not a part of the equation.
Well, it is. It's not for most teams, and most this is going to sound like
changing
a shot, but Oklahoma State hired Brian Van Gorder as an analyst. How serious are they taking their defense?
I'll just leave that right there. I think your statement does not need to be validated.
All right.
Just drop the mic. Keep walking.
Thank you.
We'll talk about some of the other players that could be drafted tomorrow. We ran out of time, but let's step aside. When we come back, we'll get to our My 5 question of the day as Sports Beat continues on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beats, My 5 Question of the Day, on 960 AM and 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Eric, what do you believe is on Notre Dame football coaches Brian Kelly's checklist for the final week of spring practice? Five answers coming your way. We've ranked them from 5 to 1, number one being the biggest check on his checklist. We begin with either maybe an added choice or number 5. I never know for sure.
I was just going to tell you what Brian Kelly would say. We're going to continue to work on fundamentals, grit, the traits that we need to get better.
No depth chart.
However, I am going in a different direction. Number 5 is going to be get the recruiting stuff in order. It's a pretty decent recruiting weekend for Notre Dame among the guys that are coming in. Wide receiver Kevin Austin, linebacker Dallas Gant, defensive tackle P.J. Mustipher, yes, Sam's younger brother, defensive end Tyreek Smith. They've got some of their 2018 guys come in, and Adam Malola twins, Marky Stepp, Braden Lindsey. So this is a big deal because there's some big targets on here they'd like to kind of nail down.
Number 4.
Hone in on the right tackle battle. Who's going to be your front runner going into spring. I know Harry Hiestand, the offensive line coach, said it's not important to him, but see if there's been some separation between Tommy Kramer and Liam Eichenberg at right tackle.
Going through the things that could be on Brian Kelly's checklist for the final week of spring practice, number three.
Well, again, I do think it's time for a depth chart, and you have to sift through the options at safety. Is Nick Coleman going to be the guy that you're going to invest in? You've invested in him all spring. Are you going to live with him at free safety? And if so, then you've got to figure out who your starting strong safety is when Drew Tranquil's playing the rope, or is it going to be Devin Studstill? Is it going to be Jalen Elliott?
Number two.
The big deal here is the defensive line options, and Scott Pagano's going to Oregon, so you don't have to reshuffle the line to accommodate him, which would have been a very pleasurable task for Brian Kelly. You know, I think that there are some people that have nailed down some starting jobs, but that defensive tackle spot where you've got Jonathan Bonner and maybe Elijah Taylor when he gets healthy, you've got to figure out, you know, if you're going to invest with some freshmen at that spot.
So we're going through things that could be on Brian Kelly's checklist for the final week of spring practice. Get recruiting stuff in order, hone in on right tackle, find out options at safety, defensive line, and number one is?
Get the quarterbacks ready for the summer. And what I mean by that is Tom Reese was talking to us the other day about how he improved so much the one summer between his early enrollee and his true freshman year because he had to teach the system to other quarterbacks. He had to know it well enough to teach it, and that's where Brian Kelly has to get, and Tom Reese and Chip Long have to get Brandon Wimbush and Ian Book. They have to be good enough to teach it, and that's where we'll see them take off in their development.
And that concludes our My 5 Question of the Day from Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, we will have a look at the South Bend Cubs tonight, and they are playing
your favorite team,
the Loons, the Great Lakes Loons.
It's going to be a great story because Al Lessar was pacing on the field for like 30 minutes straight as we were broadcasting the show.
We know that Muffet McGraw was down at the General Assembly in Indianapolis today. They recognized her for being going into the Hall of Fame. She got, you know, some kind of one of those little resolutions and so forth. Got to meet the governor, and we'll have much, much more.
All that coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section. Congratulations to Notre Dame hockey leading scorer Anders Bjork. He is joining his teammate, goaltender Cal Peterson, and one of my favorite players in Notre Dame history, Anders Lee. They're all going to be playing for Team USA in the upcoming World Championship. Anders won a bronze medal, I guess it was 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, for Team USA. So Cal and Anders both will be playing for Team USA in that event. And as of right now, they have not signed pro contracts. So as of right now, they're still on the Notre Dame hockey roster. There you go. Eric, thank you. I will talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good.
Mr. Thomas Noy will join us in just a couple of moments. I got to sneak in Blackhawks. Whoa. But we have basketball to get to. Top of the hour.
This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on your home of the Irish. 960 AM and 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's a home run ball. Going for it is Fuller. He's out there. He catches it. Touchdown, Notre Dame.
Jackson with a spectacular spin move. And now the no-look pass to Zach August with a two-handed slam.
Adios. Two-run home run, Gleyber Torres.
Kaiser looks, timing pattern.
Caught, touchdown, Notre Dame. Corey Hunter Jr.
Number one goes down at Notre Dame again.
Your hosts are Tom Noy and Darren Pritchett.
Hour number two of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs at Four Winds Field, the Cubs and the Loons, the Midwest League affiliate of the Los Angeles Dodgers. We'll square off tonight at 7:05. You can hear the game on WSBT Radio. Jordan Automotive Group pregame show gets everything started at 6:50. But until then, I am joined by Tom Noy. He is the Fighting Irish basketball insider for the South Bend Tribune. He eats, drinks, sleeps basketball 365. 24-7 pretty much. So I assume you're starting to get jacked for the NBA draft, let alone the NFL draft, which is sooner?
No. First things first, Aaron. The NBA playoffs started on Saturday, so we're full go with that for now. Watching a couple of Notre Dame players make their debuts on Sunday, and my goal tonight, make sure you do not get to the second half of your budget that you sent me earlier today. No baseball talk. We're talking hoops the whole hour.
Oh, you think so? See, little did you know that I kind of left a little spot there that, you know, I have to at least mention the Blackhawks because we may not get to mention them much longer. Kind of like last year, one and done. Wow. See, that's why I always say the NHL playoffs is fascinating. You just never know. The unexpected happens in the NHL playoffs. Now, I will give the NBA playoffs some props. The Bulls knocking off the Celtics 8-1 in game one. That caught my attention. I like it. That was kind of fun to see. Now, I'm not sure how the series will finish out. We'll talk about that in a second. But it's one thing for the Blackhawks to lose two at home. They have not scored a goal against Pecorine and those pesky Nashville Predators. It is 6-0 Predators in the goal column through two games. And now game three is tonight. And the Blackhawks, my goodness, if you lose this game, your back is up against the wall, down three games to none. Only a couple of teams have ever rallied from down 3-0. They have the horses to get it done, but I've always felt like, Tom, you see in the National Football League, a team clinches everything they can acquire. Week 12, week 13, they start resting guys. Then you sit out the wild card week, and then all of a sudden you start playing, and you lay an egg in that first playoff game. I mean, the Blackhawks were on cruise control for, I guess it was about a week and a half or so, and they did not play well. You just assume, well, they're just kind of going through the motions. Well, I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but 6-0, the score in two games, that's just almost impossible to believe. Even though the Predators are capable, they're a really, really good hockey team. But my goodness, for the team that's supposed to possibly win the Stanley Cup, this has just been a very odd start to the postseason.
6-0 in United Center. They've lost their edge. They've lost their swagger. And how many people in the city of Chicago would have raised their hands and said, oh, I believe that the Chicago Bulls will win a playoff game before the Blackhawks would. Nobody would have guessed that. And the Bulls are
maybe
up 1-0.
Cornette.
And the Blackhawks, maybe Cornette. And the Blackhawks 0-2 going to Nash, Vegas. That's going to be tough.
Vegas.
It's going to be tough for the Blackhawks to come back. Now, watch them win 4 in a row and everybody be like, eh, see, yeah, we knew it all along.
Nash, Vegas. I like that.
You like that, huh?
That's a pretty good little twist of names right there. I like it. Well, tonight will be a very intriguing game three. Nashville will be rocking tonight, but I tell you what, you lose this one. If you're the Predators, all of a sudden you start getting nervous again, because you're right. If there's anybody that can roll four straight, blink of an eye, it is the Chicago Blackhawks, with especially the top two lines that they have and the defense core that are out there most of the time. Crawford has proven they can turn it around in a hurry, but right now, whoa, things are getting very interesting in the Western Conference, with right now the Hawks down two games to none and looking to score their first goal of the postseason tonight. Well, I mentioned the Bulls were able to knock off the Celtics in game one of their best of seven Eastern Conference final. It got a little shaky at the end, as I'm not sure if the officiating got everything right, but now we review everything, and the Celtics just kept getting the ball back, it seemed like. But the Bulls held on, picked up the victory. Jimmy Butler, 30 points. He was huge in the fourth quarter, Tom. But I want to focus more on Jaren Grant, 6 points, 4 rebounds, a couple assists in that ball game. Hit a big three-pointer when the Bulls couldn't buy a three-pointer in the first half. How do you see his role panning out throughout this series against Boston?
It was nice to see Jaren hit that step-back three at a big time, too, because he's been struggling with his outside shot. He shot it a little bit better earlier in the season, and as well as he played, I think it was in January, Fred Hoiberg said, all right, we're going to go a different direction and go with Rajon Rondo and Michael Carter-Williams, and Jaren Grant logs a whole bunch of DNP CDs. So it's been a weird year for the Bulls, and it's really been a weird year for Jaren Grant, but to see him get those playoff minutes like he had last night and hits that big three, I think it put him up 4 at that point. So that's a big shot for Jaren Grant, because he's really struggled with that. to shoot it at a big time and to shoot it with confidence, to play 21 minutes for this team, I think, again, Fred Hoiberg has just got to settle on, say, look, Rajon Rondo, he's our veteran. He's going to be the main guy. But Jaren Grant's a former first-round pick. He was a college All-American when he was here his senior year. I think he's just got to play. And you put him in as the backup point guard and just ride that rotation. You play Jaren Grant. You play Bobby Portis. You go with Jimmy Butler. And I was sitting there watching last night. I'm like, all right, well, anytime Jimmy Butler wants to show up, he might as well show up, because they were struggling there. And then he goes for 23 in the second half. It's like, well, there's Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler's doing what Jimmy Butler does. So that's good to see for the Bulls. But you just got to play Jaren Grant. You can't yo-yo him the way Fred Hoiberg's been doing most of this season.
I mean, Tom, I know they wanted to bring in a veteran point guard. They wanted some experience at that spot. Mm-hmm. But just the baggage with Rondo, it just feels like it's a lot to have to deal with. And really, is he really the same player that he was a couple of years ago, or even the guy that helped the Celtics win a championship? I don't follow the sport as much as you do, but I just don't feel like the game's the same.
No, and you look at Rajon Rondo, and also look at Dwayne Wade when he misses the dunk last night. Father Time's undefeated, and he's caught up to Dwayne Wade. He's caught up with Rajon Rondo. But it's just been a weird situation for Jaren Grant, because the Bulls make the trade for him and Robin Lopez. Robin Lopez played really well last night against the Celtics in that opener, by the way. But you get Jaren Grant, and you say, all right, he's a former first-round pick. He's going to be the Bulls' point guard. Then they bring in Rajon Rondo. Then they sign Michael Carter-Williams. They bring in Isaiah Cannon. It's almost like at one point I think they had five point guards on the roster. So it's hard for Jaren Grant to show what he can do in the NBA. Because not only is he playing behind Rajon Rondo, where Fred Hoiberg's like, all right, I'm going to go with the veteran. But the minutes behind Rondo have been so sporadic that if you just stick with the rotation that they had last night, maybe they're not 41-41 and the number 8 seed in the Eastern Conference.
15 road wins during the regular season. They win game one against the number 1 seed at TD Garden. So how does this series unfold? Do you feel like the Bulls have a realistic chance to pull off the upset?
History says no, and I think I'll agree with history. I think it's only happened 5 times since they went to the 1-8 format, where an 8 team has beat a 1 seed. It may turn into a long series, but I think that the Bulls got the Celtics' attention. Celtics were playing with a little extra stuff going on with Isaiah Thomas. How deep how effective can he be with the death of his sister, as this series gets deeper? That's going to be a question. I saw where he does plan on playing tomorrow's game 2 and then hopping a flight to the Pacific Northwest to take care of his sister's arrangements. So that's a tough situation, but the Celtics are the number 1 team in the East for a reason, and I think eventually we'll see that as this series gets deeper.
Tom Noy, Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio at 6:15. Is there an increasing role for Pat Connaughton with the Portland Trailblazers?
You want to say yes, but the way Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum played yesterday, and then you also have a guy like Alan Crabb as the third guard off the bench, who by the way, happens to make $18 million. Yes, I
who?
Said that. Alan Crabb happens to make $18 million a year. Here's my memory of Alan Crabb, Darren, and I'm sure you'll say, oh yeah, I remember that too. Alan Crabb was on the California team, University of California team, that played Notre Dame down at what was the old Old Spice Classic in Orlando.
Okay.
Where California finished the first half against Notre Dame with 5 points as a team.
Yeah.
Remember that game?
Yeah.
I think Notre Dame was up 21-5 in that game and wound up they wound up winning that one and then beating Wisconsin. But Alan Crabb, when I saw him play in college, I didn't think he was an $18 million a year player. So you have the two best combo guards, you have the best backcourt in McCollum and Lillard, and then you have Alan Crabb. It's tough for Pat Connaughton right now. Year 2 of a 3-year contract, only the first 2 years are guaranteed. It'll be interesting to see if the Blazers pick up Pat's option for year 3. But the way he finished the regular season, they sat all the main guys. So Pat Connaughton finally got a chance to play the final two regular season games this season. He went for career highs in both. He went for 15, and then on the last game of the regular season, he had 16 and shot it really well. He shot it well in limited minutes yesterday. He hit that big bucket to tie it at 88. He only played 3 minutes. So it's an odd situation because you look at Demetrius Jackson, second-round draft pick of the Celtics from Notre Dame, spent the majority of his rookie year in the D-League learning what the game is all about. And then you have a guy like Pat Connaughton who's basically done nothing but sit on the bench for 2 years. He hasn't gone to the D-League. The Blazers don't have a D-League affiliate close to Portland, so it's an odd situation with Pat where, yeah, it's great that he was drafted, but he really has not shown literally almost anything in his first 2 years as a professional basketball player.
Well, I'm pretty sure Pat Connaughton and Trey Mancini were on the same Notre Dame baseball team.
Yes, they were.
They're very close. Okay. I don't know if people heard the story about Mancini from yesterday, Tom. I don't know if you heard this or not.
Mm-hmm.
But Mancini for the Orioles hit 2 home runs in Toronto. He has now tied the Major League record for the most home runs in so many games to start a career. Trevor Story of Colorado did the same feat last year. But Mancini, I mean, I think it's 34 at-bats, something like 7 home runs. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. Well, in that game, not only did Mancini hit 2 home runs, but once he hit the second home run, I think it's Chris Gentry, I should have wrote down the name, grabbed his bat, went to the plate, he hit a home run. And then in the ninth inning, Manny Machado, all-star third baseman, said, all right, I got to try. He grabbed the same bat that Mancini hit 2 home runs. He hit a home run over the right field fence. So that bat had 4 home runs, and Mancini should open a bat manufacturing company because whoever touches his bat right now are hitting home runs.
I wouldn't want to touch that. I wouldn't want any part of that bat, Darren, because what if you're like the fifth guy up in that lineup and you say, hey, let me use that, and then you wind up breaking the bat?
I just wouldn't want to take the mojo away from Trey Mancini, man. He is locked in right now.
Yes, that's good to see.
I mean, the former Irish first baseman, he is forcing his way into Buck Showalter's lineup in Baltimore. Tom Noy, Darren Pritchett with you, SportsBeat on WSBT Radio. Every year we hear about the Portsmouth Invitational where college players go and they go work out. I'm assuming NFL personnel is there. So we got a couple of seniors wrapped up their careers at Notre Dame. Anybody playing in that event?
Steve Astoria played in that for Notre Dame last week. Top 64 seniors coming out of college that have professional aspirations, not necessarily NBA, because I think you've been around Steve Astoria long enough the past 4 years where I think he's realistic that, yeah, maybe the NBA may not work out for him, but in some way, shape, or form, he still continues to want to, he still wants to continue to play basketball at some level, whether it's overseas, whether it might be in the D League. He says, somebody's going to pay me to play professional basketball. Why would I walk away from that? So top 64 players or 64 seniors coming out of college played in Portsmouth last week. They played 3 games over 4 days. Steve Astoria, 3 games, averaged 29 minutes. Hey, look, even at the Portsmouth Invitational, Steve Astoria is playing major minutes, Darren. Who knew?
Interesting, so, but no V.J. Beachum, though?
No, Steve Astoria, 29 minutes, averaged 9.6 points, 6.3 rebounds, 3 assists per game. And in his last game, his team got waxed the first 2 games. I think they lost their first one by like 31 points. They lost their second one, but they bounced back and they won Saturday. In Saturday's game, Steve Astoria had game high or team highs for points. He had 20. He had 9 rebounds, which would have tied his career high at Notre Dame. And he also had 5 steals, which would have been a career high for him at Notre Dame. He played 31 minutes. So Steve Astoria in the Portsmouth Invitational, his former teammate at Notre Dame, V.J. Beachum, was also supposed to play on the old advice of his agent. V.J.
Really?
Beachum said, you know what? I think I'm going to take a pass at the Portsmouth Invitational.
What's your read on that?
According to V.J. Beachum, he says his agent believes he's slotted somewhere to go between 40 and 50 in the June NBA draft. depending on how all the teams shake out as far as the draft order. So he says he's pretty confident, his agent was pretty confident, that he could skip that. Now, that said, it's okay if he skips the Portsmouth Invitational as long as he can get into Chicago to the NBA Combine. Because remember, last year, VJ Beachum declares for the draft. He wants to see what the draft process is all about. Mike Bray encouraged VJ Beachum to put his name into the draft with the thought that he could get into the NBA Combine in Chicago in May. Turns out VJ Beachum doesn't get invited. So he has no choice but to come back for a senior year. Hopefully he can be invited this year and show scouts what he can do, a little bit of what he can do. Maybe even test if he can just go there and get tested with some of the individual skill work and open some people's eyes. But VJ Beachum believes that he's slotted somewhere between 40 and 50 for June. We'll just have to wait and see.
So now we look ahead to next season for the Fighting Irish basketball team. Those two guys no longer with the program. You got Bonzi Colson back. You got Matt Farrell back along with other parts. You have an intriguing freshman coming in. Is there any opportunity for Mike Bray to bring in a transfer?
Yes, and I think he has to bring in a transfer because not looking at this coming season, because the rotation will be pretty much set. I mean, even if you found a perfect graduate transfer that would be able to graduate from his current school and be eligible right away, I don't know if there's a need for that right now. But you look down the road a year from now, Notre Dame's going to have 7 scholarships available to give to current high school juniors or transfers or however they want to dole those out. There's only going to be 6 players on the roster when you start the 2018-19 season. So it's almost like you have to get a transfer this offseason because you have so many scholarships and so many holes that you've got to try to balance that out. And on Friday, when the evaluation period reopened, Notre Dame went up to see Juwan Durham, who was 6'11", 220, played his freshman year this past season, played in 28 games for the University of Connecticut, decided, you know what, it's not going to work out with Kevin Ollie. I think I'm going to go somewhere else. So Juwan Durham averaged 1.6 points and 1.5 rebounds a game. He is on Notre Dame's radar. Mike Bray and Rod Belanis and Ryan Humphrey went to Storrs, Connecticut on Friday to see Juwan Durham. I think Juwan Durham's going to tentatively have a visit scheduled at Notre Dame the first weekend in May. So he'll sit out whatever school he chooses. He'll sit out the 2017-18 season, and then he'll have 3 years of eligibility left. So Notre Dame's going to lose Austin Torres. They're going to lose Martin Gebbin after the 17-18 season. Juwan Durham could be a good piece to plug into that hole right there.
So is there a chance?
I think there's always a chance. It's so early in the recruiting process with these transfer guys to where, yeah, coaches have started making contact. Notre Dame made contact, obviously, with Juwan Durham. They're probably making contact with several other guys that have expressed a desire to transfer, but for them to make a decision, they've got to go see the campus of the new school that they want to go to. So once you get Juwan Durham on campus, he'll be able to get on campus before Notre Dame gets through with our final exam. So he'll be able to kind of talk with some of the guys on the team that are coming back next year, maybe play some pickup with them, see how he fits. So I think given the fact that you have 7 scholarships to give a year from now, Juwan Durham makes an awful lot of sense right now for this men's basketball team.
Let's look ahead to next season from a different perspective. Repeat opponents for the Fighting Irish. What do you expect for Notre Dame's schedule to look like when you think about the teams they'll play twice in the ACC? Do they get Boston College again?
The permanent repeat opponents remain the permanent repeat opponents for Notre Dame, which are Boston College and Georgia Tech. The other two repeat opponents that rotate every year, where it's two teams on, two teams off. Next year's repeat opponents, in addition to Boston College and Georgia Tech, North Carolina State, and the defending national champion, North Carolina Tar Heels.
Well, out of those 8 games, I would think 6 or 7 are very winnable at the very least.
So you're not winning in Chapel Hill, or you're not winning in Chestnut Hill? Is that what you're saying, Darren?
I said at least. I said at least. I'm not pointing to any particular game. I'm just making a statement that that's very doable.
That is very doable.
Huge changes at NC State, and you know Georgia Tech. They beat a lot of really good teams, but they lost to a lot of bad teams. Now, I know it was a young team, so they're going to be, you would think, better this year. But, I would take my chances against Georgia Tech compared to Virginia, Louisville, Duke. You know where I'm going with that conversation.
Absolutely. So the four repeaters, Boston College and Georgia Tech, North Carolina and North Carolina State, these next teams, the group of teams, are home opponents only for Notre Dame in 17-18.
Okay.
Florida State, Louisville, Miami, Pittsburgh, Virginia Tech. Road only, Clemson, Duke, Syracuse, Virginia, and Wake Forest. So Notre Dame, of their nine road games next season, Darren, four of them will be in the state of North Carolina, with Wake, North Carolina State, North Carolina, and Duke. So a lot of time in Tar Heel State next season.
The good news is Mr. Collins went to the NBA, so the Irish don't have to worry about what would have been a pretty good sophomore forward for the Demon Deacons.
Who hasn't gone to the NBA from the ACC?
Yeah, no kidding. I mean,
except, of course, for Bonzi Colson. You look at the first-team All-ACC, four of the five guys that were first-team All-ACC have gone on to the NBA. The only guy coming back would be one, Bonzi Colson II.
Hmm. Are you surprised that the decision was so quick with Bonzi?
Quick? It wasn't. I thought it would be quicker, to be honest. Because,
really?
Yeah,
I thought it was pretty rapid.
All the indications I had gotten during the season, at the end of the season, heading into postseason, with his family, with his coach, with his teammates, with former teammates, they were saying, you know what, there's really no decision. I think Bonzi just took a couple of extra days and to really sit back and watch. You know what? Before he decided, Jason Tatum was leaving, Jonathan Isaac was leaving, Dwayne Bacon, Xavier Raton Mays from Florida State. All those guys declared. He just Donovan Mitchell declared, but will not sign with an agent. But from all indications, are that Donovan Mitchell will probably not be back at Louisville because he's projected as a first round pick. So I was surprised it took as long as it did, honestly, because even Bonzi said toward the end of the year, anytime anyone wanted to talk about the NBA draft, he would just cut them off and say, you know what, I'm a four-year guy, and I plan to be here 4 years. But I do understand you do have to kind of take some time and look at it from that perspective. And, yeah, I wasn't surprised that he decided to come back, but I wouldn't have been surprised had he decided to go, because you look at everything that he's accomplished in 3 years. He's had a heck of a run for the last 3 years with two Elite Eights, with winning an ACC championship, with getting to the ACC championship game twice in the last 3 years.
But Tom, every time I looked at NBA drafts, nobody had him going in the two-round draft. So, I mean, really was the choice made for him? And I don't mean that negatively, but at the same time, there just didn't seem to be a lot of interest, right?
Well, there didn't. I don't know if it wasn't so much there wasn't interest as to there may not have been a lot of people that kind of understood what his game was all about. I think he was a guy. See, now we get into a weird situation with the NBA Combine, because I mentioned earlier in the show where Mike Bray basically encouraged VJ Beachum to go to turn pro a year ago, for one of the reasons being get to Chicago and let people see your game. You know, put your game on display, let people see what you can do. So I figured that was the way Bonzi Colson was going to go. And we met with Mike Bray last week after the awards night at Notre Dame. He said, you know what, there's no reason to go to Chicago to put your name in and just to go unless you're not 100% in and trying to get to the first round. And I kind of scratched my head, and I was thinking, well, you kind of encouraged VJ to do exactly that last year, because there was no way last year that VJ Beachum was a first-round NBA draft pick. It just wasn't going to happen. So I think if people would have been able to see Bonzi Colson in some 5-on-5 situations in Chicago and see that despite his size at 6'5", but with a 7'2 wingspan, being able to still get his shot off against length and size and guys that are bigger than him, I think he would have grown on some people. Like, you know what? I'm looking at this guy and this guy and this guy on my sheet, but That Colson kid from Notre Dame just keeps sticking in my mind because his game is just really good. So I don't know. And a lot of those early mock drafts are just done with guys just off the top of the guys. You know, it's the who's who of the one and dones. They throw those guys automatically into the NBA draft pool until you can kind of really just look at what happens in the combine, what happens with individual workouts with different NBA teams. Then once you get into like late May, early June, and see how that pecking order moves up, there'll be guys that are moving up into the first round that haven't been in the first round all year, and then there'll be guys sliding out of the first round and going deep into the second that have been like lottery picks for the most of the season.
I've left the most important question for last.
Uh-oh. Here's my answer, too. Just get to 9-9.
No, we're past that. 11 is the new 9. I told you that's the new phrase this year. 11 is the new 9.
Yes, it is.
My question is, who are the Irish going to play in the Big Ten ACC Challenge?
You know, I'd hate to say it, but it's trending in this direction because, you know, Darren, who gets the first pick of or how the ACC Big Ten challenges are decided is it's all about television.
Sure.
So if Notre Dame's going to be a top 15 team, they'll be a top 20 team for sure, but maybe even top 15. If they're a top 15 pick, and given who they have coming back and who this other team has coming back, I can see a trip to East Lansing and see him play in Michigan State.
Nice.
Because it's made for TV. You know, and I know there'll be teams in the ACC that'll be ranked higher than Notre Dame. Louisville could be the number one team in the country. North Carolina, of course, will be ranked. Duke will be ranked. And then watch out, Miami could be a top 10 pick next year. But we've seen Notre Dame, we've seen Michigan State, Louisville. We've seen Michigan State, Duke. We've seen Michigan State, North Carolina. Yeah, we've seen Michigan State, Notre Dame. But there'll be a little bit more juice behind that game if it's in East Lansing. Notre Dame making the first trip to East Lansing since, I think, I want to say the 60s. So it'll be one of the top ranked teams in the Big Ten. How many Big Ten teams will be ranked at the beginning of the year besides Michigan State and Wisconsin or maybe Michigan?
Not very many, I'm expecting. Not very many. Wisconsin will be there.
Mm-hmm.
They always are. They never go away. They always figure out a way to put up 22, 24, 26, 28 wins. They're a machine. They have their system. They recruit to it, and it works out very well. Tom Noy, Darren Pritchett with you. Quick timeout. SportsBeat continues next on WSBT.
Take us with you in and out of the car. Download the free WSBT radio app from the iTunes or Droid App Store. Listen live anywhere.
It is 6:39 on this Monday evening. Darren Pritchett at Four Winds Field. South Bend Cubs baseball coming up in just about 11 minutes with our Jordan Automotive Group pregame show. We have Tom Noy, the Fighting Irish basketball insider for the South Bend Tribune. Back at our studios, we had a basketball segment for the last 20 minutes or so. Well, you couldn't pull it off. We have to talk a little baseball. You realize that.
I thought I could keep going.
It's America's pastime.
It is. It's baseball season, so I will allow you to talk some baseball. We talked hockey
and
talked hoops.
Here's what I don't get. Now, I'm a huge baseball fan. You're not as big a fan as I am. I don't get this. Every time I go to Twitter or sometimes on the baseball shows, all we ever hear about is the media talking about how everybody is tired of how long the games take. Here's my question. I never hear any of my baseball friends ever complaining about a game being too long. I really am not one to ever say, like many do, it's a media creation. But to me, this has become a media creation, or they are speaking for the people in Major League Baseball that are trying to create quicker games. It is their belief that the younger generation has a short attention span, which may be true, and we got to move things along. We had a game on the last road trip. I saw my first intentional baseball ball where the pitches weren't thrown, where they just pointed to first base and you ran down there. My goodness, it saved 45 seconds of my life. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do with those 45 seconds that I saved by having the guy run down to first base. But my point is, I know a lot of people that love this game that are huge fans, even average fans, and I've never once heard anybody say and put up a strong argument why baseball needs to be played quicker. In fact, you look at NFL games, I'm betting there's more NFL games than you would expect that are longer than actual average of Major League Baseball games and minor league games.
And not only that, Darren, but how long does it take to play the final 2 minutes of an NBA game?
Oh, my goodness. I was waiting for the Bulls-Celtics to get over so I could do some of my duties at home, and I about fell asleep. I could have read War and Peace by the time the final 2 minutes. We got to review this and review that. I mean,
We're going to take a timeout, and then we're going to try to inbound the ball, and then we're going to take another timeout, and then we're going to...
Tom, am I correct? Fred Hoiberg actually took back-to-back timeouts to move the ball further down the floor. Am I correct?
You are correct.
See, come on.
But
stop it.
The whole baseball's got to speed it up. That's what makes baseball baseball. There is no clock. It's timeless. It could take 2.5 hours. It could take 4 hours. I've never turned on a baseball game and said, you know what, I'm going to turn it off because it has to. I'm going to wait till I wish it was the seventh inning. I mean, you understand if you follow sports, you understand that going in that
yes,
you're going to watch a baseball game. You're not going to be out of there in an hour and 15 minutes.
Baseball fans like the game because it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
People that don't like baseball, it's too slow. So making the game faster isn't just going to turn people onto the game, in my opinion.
It's not.
I just don't think it's realistic. But anyway, well, right now it's kind of interesting. The Chicago Cubs started last year 25-6. This year, they're 6-6, swept at home by the Pittsburgh Pirates over the weekend. 6-1 yesterday. The Cubs' bullpen just not good right now. Koji Uehara gave up 3 in the 8th, and Justin Grimm 3 in the 9th, and the Buccos finish off the sweep, a 6-1 victory yesterday. Let me read these stats to you, see if anybody is surprised. Some small sample sizes, very small. Let's check back in a month. Probably these look different. No surprise. The Cubs starting rotation, number one in the NL and ERA. That's not going to shock anybody. Third in on-base percentage. Even though they're not getting as many hits as you want, they're getting on base. That's as important, if not more than batting average. But how about this? I don't know if any Cub fan out there, unless they saw this stat, realizes this, that they are last in the National League in home runs with 9. You would think Schwarber, Rizzo, and Bryant have 9 combined right now, let alone the rest of the team.
Here's my baseball analysis. You want me to throw this at you, Darren?
Pick and roll, baby.
9-9, my man.
11 is the new 9.
The little amount of the Cubs that I've watched, all I can say is for being it so early in the season and the Cubs being at 6-6, it seems like every time I turn on a Cubs game, there's another Cubs player taking a called third strike. I think they're being a little too careful with the pitches that they see instead of just going up there and hacking, swinging for the fences. There's my baseball analysis for the night. Take it or leave it.
Though they aren't getting the clutch hits right now.
Right.
But the good news is they're getting on base, so you know it's going to turn around. I don't think the Cubs World Championship honeymoon is over.
It's over.
12 games. No, if you check, probably in July, they're going to go 6-6 at some point. It's just now getting more attention because it's the first 12 games of the year. And plus, they went 25-6 last year, and now they're 6-6. That is a big difference.
So they're not going to go on a 19-game win streak to match that 25-6 start?
Now, that would be a story.
I think
that would be front page of the South Bend Tribune in 19 days.
I think if this continues, Joe Madd's going to have to shake something up and trade somebody to the Cardinals.
No, he'll just create a new T-shirt. When in doubt, create a new T-shirt.
There you go.
Avisail Garcia, 2-run home run of the 10th inning yesterday. Sox beat the Twins. And how about the White Sox? 6-5 right now. A better record than the Cubs. 40 runs scored, only 32 allowed for the good guys. And on this road trip, they won 2 out of 3 from Cleveland, 2 out of 3 from Minnesota. Now they're in the Bronx to take on the Yankees. Game one of a 3-game series tonight, 7:05. Derek Holland on the mound. I should mention the Cubs host Milwaukee tonight at 8:05. John Lackey starts. The Brewers in second place in the NL Central. A game behind the Reds, and the Pirates and the Cubs are 6-6. Again, check back in a couple of weeks. We'll probably have a different conversation. Sports Beat tonight, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Sport Clips. You watch sports. They cut hair. It's perfect. Sport Clips. It's good to be a guy. Harold Ziegler, Ford Lincoln, and Elkhart, 2525 Bypass Road or at Z4.com and Legacy Heating and Air. Tom, we'll be talking to you later in the week.
I'll see you down at Four Winds Field on Friday.
We will save you a seat. Have a good evening.
You too, my man.
He's Tom Noy, the Fighting Irish basketball insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett, South Bend Cubs baseball next on WSBT.